It gives me great pleasure to introduce Brian B. from San Luis Obispo as your speaker.
Does this belong to somebody? Is this yours, Jeff?
No,
I'm you. Just stays there?
Okay.
Okay. So, it's not emergency. Mine. Anyhow, I'm Brian. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, and this out of the way, clear the doorway. You know, I was sitting here and I came in here and they were telling me how this room here, Robert was telling me the history of this room. And I guess it's been here since the 50s or something like that, 60s. And it's so funny. And I was sitting here and I was realizing that, oh, I bet you my mom had come into this room. Because I was, we were in Ventura, and her and her friend Florence would drive all over Hell's Half Acre going to meetings. And I didn't know anything about this because I was still out back, see you, Mom, you know, doing my thing. And, you know, I was in my, was about 17 at that time when we went to go back to live with her. And because she had been out of jail for a while, and now she had a job, and she was, and we could, you know, she could take care of us. And she was, she had been now become a citizen of the citizens, and could, you know, take care of kids where she couldn't before. But it was so funny to think that here in this room, that was in about 69, that she probably had come in here into this room. And now here I am. And I'm also like the alcoholic of the family. gee, where do I start? I don't know any of you guys really, except for Robert from inviting me up here. But my story goes, I can remember my, a lot of people can't remember that when they first drank, but alcoholics always seem to know, boom, it was on this day, you know, and you know, I can remember my first drunk, seriously, and it was the last day of school. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, and where they gave, your last day of school was a half day, and so we, at the end of that day, we all went to this Steve Hawkins' house, and we went over to his house, and somebody got a bottle of wine. Somebody showed up with a bottle of scotch. I didn't know what the hell that shit was. And somebody came up with, you know, all these, some beer and some of that stuff. And so I remember seeing the bottle of scotch, and I said, well, let's have a drinking contest. So I got the shot glasses out, and I started pouring the shots and drinking them. And I remember all the other guys were like one or two shots, man. They were done. They were through. It's like, no, come on, let's go, keep going. And before I knew it, I was in the living room on the couch, and I just kind of laid over on the side of the couch. I learned, one of the first things I learned in being drunk is never lay down.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Never lay down, man, because all of a sudden that room was like, and I was like, oh no. And there I was laying on the couch and I couldn't get up. And here it comes, and it just threw up all over this guy's couch. And they were all drunk too. And they were all 13 years old. And they were all, you know, just as loaded as I was. Well, maybe not as much, but they were all pretty high. But they were having fun. So they picked me up, took me outside, put me in the, he had one of those big hammocks that they'd have in the yard, you know. And then the guy had a bubblegum machine, you know, kid, you know. But they thought, let's go get the bubble gum and chew it up and spit it all over Brian. Because Brian couldn't get up and do anything about it. And so they did. Man, I just had blue and red and yellow all over me. And these guys, you know, so I just said, I'm going to kill you tomorrow. And, you know, and that's where I was. That was my first drunk. Right out of the gate, I was experiencing out of control drinking. You know, it was just like, I'm drinking, that's what I'm doing. And we're going to go until I can. And then, you know, incomprehensible demoralization. You know, it was like, you know, I had, you know, I don't know how they talked about it, but I'm sure it got around school and the next summer. And then hanging around with lower companions. anybody who's going to spit all over you at the first opportunity they can get is not necessarily your good bro, you know. So that was one of the ways I started, you know, I was drinking at 13. And then I also, you know, I kind of got into a system where we drank on the weekends. And then I remember going to parties and down there and, you know, just show up to somewhere and then this gang showed up. It's like, okay, and I turned around and I get hit with a baseball bat and I'm going running and there again, you know. And it's starting to cause problems where the drinking is showing up. You know, fast forward to... There's a lot of drinking, and what I learned to do was control drinking through the years. I controlled my drinking because I didn't want to end up, well, I had a family for one thing, and I had a job. And I know some people say, well, screw that, I'm going to drink anyway. But I didn't. I controlled. I didn't stop drinking. I just had to drink every day to a certain limit. And I had this limit, but I did it religiously. And, you know, so I drank. There's a lot of stories in between, but I'm going to skip to the near the end there, where I was, the day that I got, I had been in and out of the program, because I was now doing that stuff called methamphetamines that they talked about. Some of you may have heard about it. But, you know, that stuff, I thank that stuff because it got me into this program faster. I know they call it an outside issue, but it affects this as much as the beer did. And it made me drink a lot of beer and do everything fast and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and so I was doing that at the end. And so along with that, alcohol skews my moral judgment. Alcohol just is like, oh, game's on. When I add that other stuff to it, oh, the sky's the limit. I can just do whatever I feel like. And I did. And, you know, my wife didn't like that. Because, you know, going around with other women is not on her agenda. And, you know, I just did things that were, when I was not drinking and not doing that stuff, I wouldn't do those things. But when I entered that stuff into my body, I did some of the weirdest, craziest things in the world. You know? And now, I decided that I think I'm still doing this stuff. And my wife finds out about the affair that I'm having, and she kicks me out of the house, and I had no place to go. And the guy that I work with, who's my crank dealer, says, I have a room. And so guess what? I move up to Atascadero, and I'm living with my crank dealer. And I'm thinking, this is an upgrade. And it's not. But my skewed thinking again. You know, so... one thing led to another, and I was trying to make things good with the wife, and went to counselors and stuff. I'm still not living at home, and I went to a counselor, and got into the program for a little bit, reluctantly, because it's what they wanted. You know, it's what they wanted. It would get them off my back, and it would show good on the paperwork that I was doing something here, going to meetings. So I went to meetings for a while, then. You know how it is, you know, I was kind of half-hearted, you know, half measures totally. I was just coming to meetings and doing a few little bit. Then, let's see, the woman I was with at that time, who I ended up marrying, but the woman I was with, we went up to a Grateful Dead concert up in Laguna Seca, and, it was back on. You know, I was back drinking wine, doing all the stuff that went with it. And I was back doing what I was doing. And then there was a period, now I'm out of the meetings because I didn't do that go in and out. I just was in, and okay, screw that, I'm out. Well, what happened is I'm a list maker. I like to, and I'd make my list of things to do. And I remember this one day, I went down. My wife was living in Arroyo Grande. I was living in the Atascadero, but I worked in San Luis Obispo. And I went down, and I had to go. She was at work, and I had to go back to my old house. And I had to go pick up my daughter, take her to the dentist, go to the bank, go to the insurance company, go back, pick up my daughter, take her back to school, do this, do that, do this. I got my list completed. Let's get loaded. And so I went in, I got everything checked off. It's like, cool, I can go get high. So I go into my garage, I take my stuff out of the garage. This is my soon-to-be ex-garage. And so I go out there and I take this and I load up a bowl and I smoke that stuff. And I, out of nowhere, comes this voice and it says, you don't have to do this anymore. You're done. And getting chills right now thinking about it. And I'm going, where did that come from? And I went, I don't have to do this anymore. It's over. And I go, okay, so what do I do next? I'm getting all my paraphernalia, pipes and little screens and all that shit you get collect, you know, the little stash bag. And I went, I always thought that I'd take it out to the pier, you know, and I'd dump it out there. I took that stuff over there. I walked out the garage door over to the trash can and dumped it in the trash can. You know, I always thought it was going to be some dramatic thing. It wasn't. It just belonged in the trash can. And that's where it went. So I leave that house in Aurora Grande. Now I'm driving back up to Atascadero where I'm living with my crank dealer still. I haven't moved yet. So I'm driving along in my little Opel going over the grades. And this voice comes in my head and says, that bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon you have at home? Our Sierra Winery. Okay, not, it had cork in it. Nice stuff. Half a bottle left. Let's just finish it. And we won't buy any more. All right? How many have heard that?
Yeah.
I won't buy any more. This will be the last one. We're just going to celebrate with this last bottle. Right? We're going to go out with a bang. And this other voice in my head comes up and it says, I get a lot of voices in my head, I guess. And this voice comes up and says, hey, that's a compromise. You're not even over the grade yet. You're not even near home, and you're already compromising this thing. You're already making a compromise about your program. You know, this other voice is, yeah, but. Yeah, buts are coming in, right? Yeah, but. But it's Cabernet. It's only a half a bottle. It's Cabernet Sauvignon. It's that really good stuff. It's the expensive stuff. It's a, you know, la da 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 da. Other voice. It's called the compromise. I don't care how you look at it. You're compromising this program. And how many times have you already done that? How many times have you say you're going to drink one beer and try to control your drink? You know that section in More About Alcoholism? Chapter 3, where it says, it goes down that list of all those things that we, you know, take a trip, not take a trip, you know, only drinking on weekends, only doing this, only, oh man, check, 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 check. I did those things. I so related to those things. And in my big book, I have a big parenthesis on there, and along the side of the thing there, it says similarities. And I had all those similarities to all those things that those people that recovered from alcoholism said they had. I had them too, you know? So anyhow, I get back up to Atascadero and I go on and I grab that bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon and I poured it out. And that was on October 4th in 1988. And so, so I had the math, it was like 29 years ago. And you know, after that, it was like, okay, now what? What do I do? I don't have any more to drink. I'm not drinking anymore. It's over. Remember the voice said that? It's over. And so I ended up moving out of that house, told the guy, I can't live here, and moved out of there. And then and I got involved, and I started going to meetings at the Alano Club there in San Luis Obispo. And I did a lot of meetings. I was sitting here in this room thinking, when I got here, I'm thinking, I remember when these rooms were smoky. It wasn't, you know, there was just a haze of smoke. And in San Luis, it was the same way. And I would sit by the back, because I don't smoke, and I would sit by the back window, and I would, you know, crack open the window. In the middle of winter, man, it would be cracked open, the wind would be blowing through. And trying to get, and then they had no smoking area. One side of the room would be non-smoking, the other side of the room would be smoking. Like, what the difference? It didn't make any sense. But, you know, so what I did is I got involved with that group. And I started doing the things that they say to do. And I started going there congratulations on becoming the new secretary. Yeah, it's an honor to do that. And congratulations on all the other guys that got elected. You know, that's an honor too, to become, even just be elected to be a secretary. And, you know, and other opportunities will come up to be of service. Just pick me. And when you do it, go like that. Say, pick me, I want to do it. And just get excited about doing stuff for this program. So I did, and I just got into, started being secretary of the meeting. And then I was the secretary of the birthday meeting there at the club for a lot of years. And now, and then it was one thing and another, and then I was the GSR for that group for a while, and I did that, and then I got married and built a house, and so I kind of, meetings went slow for a while. Still kept going, you know, but not as much. Then I got back into the meetings and started coming back a lot more. And one of the things that we used to do in 1988 when I came there was I got involved with those people that were putting on that New Year's Eve party there. So in 1988 and through the 90s and stuff, I was involved in helping doing the skits there at that and the New Year's Eve party. And so, and then there was a gap of period, and we just kind of resurrected this whole thing about 5 years, 6 years ago. So it's a fun little party to have on New Year's Eve. But you know, that's service. I'm helping people, showing them how not to be we are not a glum lot. You know, we want to have a good time. And boy, I tell you, we had a great time that night. And it was so much fun. And I had a lot of volunteers. But that's one of the things that I've learned to do. Learn to just say yes to things when they need program stuff. I got involved in H&I. I go out to the jails in San Luis Obispo County Jail. And I've been doing that for quite a while and going out there and meeting people. And I can't tell you, there was one guy up there, he's now the head guy of the Pioneer Group, and they're in San Luis Obispo, and he was in the Honor Farm for a year and a half, and he's now out, and it was nice. We took in meetings, and we got to know him a year and a half before he ever got out, and now he's coming, and now he's part of the meetings, and he's part of the group. And I tell you, if you really want to help somebody, is try to get involved in H&I, go into the jails, talk to the guys, and they need people at their level to be able to talk to them, to be able to experience what's going on in there. And then when they get out, they are so lost. They really need help on how, where this program is coming from. But like I say, I've gotten involved in doing a lot of things. Life hasn't always been rosy in Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has been cruises along. It's going to be there in spite of me, you know. It's going to be there in spite of some of the things that go on in Alcoholics Anonymous. But after, remember that lady that I was telling you about that I ran away from my wife and met this woman? Well, we got married and we were together for 10 years and then she wanted the divorce 6 months after I retired. And it's like, you what? So, you know, that was one of the hardest things in my sobriety to do. And, you know, I remember going to another group that I go in San Luis is the Melody Group. I remember going to that meeting and going in that corner and just sitting there. And sometimes I'd cry, but numb to what was happening. I thought I was going to lose my house. I thought I was going to lose all my pension. I thought I was screwed. And I thought, but you know, to tell you the truth, I really never really thought, oh, let's pick up a drink. What I knew from my sponsors and stuff, what I knew to do was get your ass to a meeting and just sit there, if nothing else. You know, just be pleasant if nothing else happens. And so I did. I just sat there and went to meetings and it was weird because what happened is the people that I needed to talk to showed up. The people. There was a guy there that was a financial. I was going to sell my house, and he's from Kansas, and he goes, "Well, buddy, we ought to rethink that." And he said, And I said, I go, what are you talking about? He says, trust me. So I followed his instructions. I'm still in that house. You know, and, you know, there was other guys. The guy that was, so I've had sponsors. So my sponsor, my very first sponsor in San Luis Obispo was a guy named Nick. I think about 6 months after I had him as a sponsor, he got involved in some financial things and literally lost his mind over that he was losing property or something like that. And he ended up driving himself off a cliff in Big Sur and killed himself over financial problems. Those are, financial problems are really temporary problems. They come and they go. And then I got another sponsor, and I got Bud. And Bud B, and he was my sponsor. And then he decided he was going to go away to school to become some type of psychologist. Didn't know what the hell what it was about, but he was going away to school in Santa Barbara. So I get another sponsor. I got a man named Tom Morton. I can say Tom Morton because Tom Morton always said his name in the meeting. And so Tom was my sponsor. And then Tom passed away. You know, he just got old and died. And then after that, I went and got the other guy that was a psychologist. I happened to run into a meeting, and he became my sponsor before the divorce. Well, as it turns out, he was a perfect one to have during a divorce because he worked in family addictions and worked with how to handle these type of situations. So it seems like everybody that I needed to have in my life fell into place and was there to help me through it, and the people in the program. You know, if I had been out there drinking, that would not have happened. If I had been out there using, that would not have happened. You know, it's just, you know, there's so many things that make up this program. And one of the things that makes up this program for me is the spiritual aspect of this program. You know, I sit down every day and pray to God about what? No, I don't. But I do pray to God. And then sometimes in the damnedest times, I just say, okay, God, what do you want me to do today? Well, a while back, I worked for the road department, and I was inspecting over in Kalinga at the granite plant there. And I checked trucks. They're hauling asphalt. They come in empty, they go out with asphalt, and I check them. And I'm standing there, and one of the things to do, have you ever been in the San Joaquin Valley and listened to AM radio? It's a different world over there. Okay? Right? It's just a different world to listen to what's coming across the radio. And so I do that to hear what other people are thinking. And I shut the radio off and I go, okay, God, I can't get into that. That's another thing altogether. I said, okay, God, what do you want me to do? What is it you want me to do today? Give me somebody to work with in my life. There's another alcoholic that I can work with, then I'll do that. And I'm out there in the middle. I mean, there's asphalt smoke and all this stuff going on. And this guy drives up in this truck, and he's right there, and he looks up at me, and I've got my necklace on. He goes, hey, what's that for? And I told him, I said, well, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. He goes, I was too about a week ago, and then I stopped going. Well, go back. You know, and so on through the next few weeks, we are having conversations about, and I don't know where the guy is right now, but you know, it was like, God put me there to be there with this guy, and he didn't know what to do, so I said, he didn't know whether he could go back to meetings or not. I said, just go back to the meeting. Just go back, you know, and do what you got to do. And it was, you know, it was a miracle how that, when you sit down and you say, okay, God, and seriously, and just feel it, and say, what do you want me to do today? Put someone in my life that I can be of service to. And then and wait. It took a half hour. You know? And my girlfriend did the same thing. She comes home to the meeting on the day, she's all like, oh. I go, what's going on? She goes, so in the morning, I wrote down that I needed a sponsor, that I needed someone to do this. And she went to the meeting, and this woman that she'd been wanting to have her sponsor says, hey, you know, I think we can work on this program. I mean, it was that quick. She wrote it that morning, went to the meeting, boom, she comes home with the woman she needed to talk to about getting on to another level of growth in this program. You know, I don't know if it worked that well and well for you guys, but man, it's worth a try. You know, and just what, and but the thing is you got to, it's not about getting things and where it's like, God, give me somebody to work with. Give me somebody that I that I can be of service to. And you have to be of, you have to get something here to be able to give it away. You have to be, get that book out and read it, understand it, so that you, when you, someone says, hey, I'm, I don't understand the fourth step, you'll be able to explain it to them. Or what's a character defect, you know? What, between a shortcoming and a defect, you know? Well, they're the same. And then how you explain that to them. You know, you got to get it from this program. You get it, but you got to go out and get it first. And you got to get it and try to go get it and grab it and make it yours. Make this program your program. You know, one of the greatest things, one of the things that really got me going about Alcoholics Anonymous, that it was like, okay, I'm in, you know, I'll drink the Kool-Aid, whatever. When that was that you can have a higher power of your understanding. You know, oh man, I look across this room, I see everybody here, and I imagine every one of you has a different one. You know, we don't all have to have the same guy. We don't all have to be on that same page. It's something that you can make up for yourself and use it in your life. What a concept. And it's like, for me, that's how I believe that it works. That we can all have a higher power of our understanding. That's what keeps me here. And, you know, I don't want people to profound, you know, talk about particular religions and stuff. Let me know you've got one and it's working for you. That's what I want to hear. You know, and how that's a way to do it. You know, one of the things I like to do, I like to, when I'm out of town, I'll go to meetings, and I've been to meetings, and you know, up and down the coast, whenever I was working out of town, I'd go to meetings, and they're the same everywhere else, wherever you go. You know, it's just other people trying to get sober. One time I was, although I will admit, they don't have them in Sudan.
Sudan.
Because I went to Sudan. After the wife left, I said, well, what do I do with my life? And I went to Tassahara, which is a Buddhist monastery up in behind Big Sur. And I met this guy there, and he says, hey, you could come work for Doctors Without Borders. And I go, well, I'm not a doctor. He says, no, no, we need people to do other things. So I ended up working for Doctors Without Borders and going to, and they went to New York and got trained, and then they sent me over to South Sudan, of all places. And there I was in South Sudan, and they don't have meetings there. So there I was, and I'm in charge of all of the supplies. And I would go out every day and buy, these guys drink a lot of sodas and beer. Okay, and so that was my job, to get all this stuff, by building supplies, a lot of that. And so they were talking about this shipment coming in from Entebbe, which is south of Sudan. And this shipment, and this truck comes in, and they're unloading this truck, and they bring this big old box, and the shipment is, has all this packing paper in there and stuff. And it is loaded to the hilt with booze of every making you can imagine. These doctors, they like to drink. They get done with that out of that hospital, and they're dealing with all the stuff that they got to deal with. They want to have a drink. And so there I was in the storeroom all by myself, going, putting them very organized and really well. You know? Yes, right there. And, you know, by color, you know. And you know, and I remember thinking to myself, God, I could drink this, and there is nobody gonna know. And you know, I had to realize that at that point in time, the only one that would know would be me and my higher power, and would never be able to get away with that. I would have to live with that for my whole life, no matter who knew, and that would eat at me for the rest of my life. You know, so. Not drinking, you know, I've been to, since I've gotten sober, I mean, things, I've learned how to scuba dive, I went with other sponsees that wanted to learn how to scuba dive, and we went and did that. You know, I've traveled besides Sudan, and done other things. Rode my bike across the United States with my wife, and you know, we rode across the, went from the Golden Gate Bridge to the Brooklyn Bridge, and went to meetings along the way. And there was a lot of places out there where there wasn't meetings. And what I would do out there when there wasn't any meetings, I would sit and I would picture the Melody Group, some people, and it probably happens here, sit in the same exact chairs, right? And I could picture, and I said, okay, there's them, and there's, you know, Leanne, and there's, I could go around the room and I'd get a mental picture of the meeting in my home group. Home groups are really important, you know. And so, but I would attend meetings as go. And, you know, I am really excited right now. Jeff knows why. The other day I bought an electric mountain bike. And, you know, it's like crazy. I mean, this type of stuff, you know, I'm riding and doing this type of stuff. If I had never gotten sober, none of this kind of stuff would happen. I wouldn't have gone on trips. I wouldn't have gone to Sudan. I wouldn't have been able to be here to help. I got a sponsee that had been able to go down and help him at the recovery center down in Santa Barbara. There's so many things I wouldn't be able to do. I wouldn't have been able to go into, you know, to help people, friends of mine that are now out of jail, that are, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do that had I picked up the drink. You know, over the years, if I had, there's not any situation in my, over the last 29 years when I look at it, where I go, I wish I drank over that. Yeah. I can't say that, I wish I had drank the last year when my brother passed away from this disease. You know, he couldn't get it. When I went through his house and was searching through his stuff and, you know, cleaning out his stuff, I found some coins in his room and stuff. He went to meetings. He got coins. He stood up and came up to meetings as a newcomer. He couldn't get it. He died from his disease. You know, and I forgot where I was going with that. Yeah, this disease, it will get you. And it cuts to our hearts at home, you know. I'm just thinking about my brother Chris, you know, who never got this program. And I'm so grateful that I'm able to get this program. And, you know, this program, if you think, we were talking about it as we were coming up here, that if you've ever tried to work with an alcoholic and get them sober, right? Good luck, right? You're not going to do it. It's not our job to get them sober, right? We can't make people sober. It's between them and that higher spirit, whoever it may be. When they connect, then we step in and help guide them in the direction that to go. Show them where the meetings are. We do whatever. Here's a cup of coffee. You know, so let's go get something to eat. That's our job. Getting people sober is not what we can do. God, I've tried. And then you go back and the guy's drinking again. It's like, oh, yeah. I had one guy, we went and dug him out of a hotel room in San Luis Obispo one time. All right, you done drinking? And all the people around him are going, yeah, he's done drinking. And it's like, yeah, I'm done drinking. Like, fucking no. So I took him back to my house and I put him down there and he slept in my house that night. I go, okay, I had to go to work. I said, yeah, I'm gone. I'm going to be gone for a little bit and I'll be right back. I go back, come back. He's still asleep. It's 1 o'clock. Still asleep. 2 o'clock. Still asleep. What the hell? I go in there and he, when that time that I went out and came back, he had gone out, got a bottle and drank the whole damn thing and passed out on the bed. You know, and made a mess. I won't go any further. Okay? And so we can't, we can try to do it, but it's not until people want to get sober that it happens. We were talking, that's where it was. That miracle that we had. We were, one day we were drinking, one day I was doing whatever I was doing, right? And then the voice in my head says, you don't have to do this anymore. For one day we're drinking, and the next day we're not. That is a miracle. Each one of us has had that miracle, you know? And our friend was describing, that's that white light experience. It may be dim to your view at the time, but if you stop and think about what you were doing before and what you're doing now, that's nothing short of a miracle. Because we were given the death sentence by doctors, right? Doctors before Alcoholics Anonymous, God, we are lucky to be here in this time and age when they have Alcoholics Anonymous. Before the Alcoholics Anonymous, we were screwed. We were going to die. Or just live a miserable life and make everybody around us miserable too. You know, in this program, we got hope. There's hope for a better day. That we don't drink, we don't do drugs, we go to meetings, we get involved. You know, and that's how you start the process. And then you let your higher power take over from there. And that's where that third step comes in. You know, make a decision to turn your will and life over the care of God as you understand them. And watch what happens. You know, be ready to do what it says to do. And another thing in this program, learn to say yes inside the program. You know, that other stuff out there we say no to. But in here, we say yes to things. We need, when they need volunteers to do stuff, be the first one out there to go do it. Get involved in groups. I'll tell you, it's like what I found of being involved in groups, it's like being backstage. When you're doing this, you're like being backstage at a concert. You know, it really is. And you know, it's been a great life of sobriety. I wouldn't have traded for anything. So a while ago, I was saying that I was talking about my brother. When I look back over the 29 years, there's no incident. My mom dying, various things happen, you know, that where I wish I had drank. But I can guarantee you, I guarantee it, that on any of those incidences, had I drank, I would have regret doing that. There would have been a regret actually taking that drink. But I can't look back and think of one where I wish I had done it on that day. You know, drinking just is not going to solve my problems. It doesn't take away my sorrow. It doesn't, it may hide it for a little bit, cloud it over, shadow it, but it's still there. And what I've learned to do in the programs and with my spiritual program that I have is I have to walk through things. I have to hang on. And if something's happening bad, I just got to hang on and go through it. And it's amazing. Life is always changing. It's always moving in and out. And inevitably, whatever is bad that's happening usually stops and something else changes. You know? There's no guarantee. I can't guarantee your life is going to be wonderful, rosy, and unicorns and all that. You know? But I guarantee you, if you go out there drinking, it's not going to be unicorns either. It's going to be hell. At least that's what everybody I've said. There's one other thing I'll share, and that is this actually goes to the people who are in the program for quite a while. If you've been in this program, say, 5 years, okay, this is the message. This is really for you. But if you're new, listen up to this. Alcoholics Anonymous, if you do this thing right, if you get a sponsor, if you go to meetings, if you get commitments, if you, God, you know, do everything, all those things you're supposed to do, become the GSR. If you do all of these things right, you will get the life that'll take you right out of AA. You understand that? It'll take you right. Your life is going to get bitching. Your life's going to get so good, you're going to go, they're at work, they really like me because I get my work done. I show up on time. My wife really likes me. I don't have time for meetings. I don't have time to go to meetings. I'm busy. My life is busy. Well, why the hell is your life busy? Because you're not drinking anymore. How'd that happen? Because you went to alcohol. Oh, okay. You know, your life. And so I've seen, and God, I have seen it happen so many times. That somebody, they come in after they go out. Well, I stopped going to meetings because my life got busy. And, you know, I got the car and I got the trucks and all that stuff. And they go out and then they lose it all. I mean, some of them just literally lose it all, that stuff that they acquired. And they come back in, they got to start all over again. You know, so staying in the middle of the herd is really important. Stay active in the program. Keep it fresh. Always changing it. You know, your sponsor moves away, get another one. You move away, get a new sponsor. You know, all these kind of things is what they tell us to do. But for some reasons, we neglect to take in all that stuff. Anyhow, 8:05, I want to go home.
Okay, let's give Brian another round of applause.